Okay, I'm rolling.
Me too.
I started hearing whispers about Marshall Latham's and Rish Outfield's return as heirs to the podcast. We have to prepare for the worst.
The Journey Into podcast is proud to present This Journey Into a Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. A journey into Star Wars, featuring many delusions of grandeur.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur here on the Journey Into podcast. My name is Marshall Latham, and I am here with Rish Outfield to finish up talking about Ahsoka, the latest offering of Star Wars live action streaming we have here.
Yeah, now you can't promise that we will finish up talking about Ahsoka.
We tried that last time.
Because in the last episode, we talked for an hour and we didn't even make it through the list. We only made it halfway. And who knows how much we will have to say about stuff this time, especially about the ending of Ahsoka and where we go from here. So, yeah, this is part two of our discussion of the last five episodes of Ahsoka. But more importantly, that you've created this list of characters, and we're just going to go through your list and talk about our feelings on these characters.
Yeah.
And yeah, play along at home, folks.
So I think we left off with the cliffhanger last time. I hung out there for everybody to come back and listen to us talk about the character of Anakin Skywalker, who makes several appearances here on the show.
He really does.
Yeah, most prominently in the fifth episode called Shadow Warrior. This is when it appears that Ahsoka has been killed, but she shows up in the World Between Worlds, which we first saw on Rebels. And she is confronted by her old master, Anakin Skywalker, played by Hayden Christensen, the original. Well, not the original. Jake Lloyd was the original, but
Sebastian Shaw is the original.
Oh, yeah. Shaw, or Stan.
No, Sebastian Stan is Winter Soldier.
Okay.
So when I heard that Hayden Christensen was going to be on this, I was just like, why? People made such a big deal when he was going to be on the Obi-Wan show.
Right.
And I understood because they flashbacked in that one episode and didn't digitally de-age him. And then there was a scene where they like sliced the helmet, and so you could see Hayden's face there. But for this, I was just like, but why do we need Hayden back? But I argue that his appearance on this show was way better and more important than his appearance on Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's just me. After I saw the Shadow Warrior episode, I called Big Anklevich and was telling him about it. And he doesn't have any connection to the Clone Wars cartoon at all. I've seen four episodes of Clone Wars, but he's seen none. And so I was telling him about these flashbacks to the Clone Wars, and that I surprised myself by really enjoying these flashbacks and thinking, wow, what a cool untold chapter of Star Wars. Because we never saw the Clone Wars in the prequels. They happened in between movies.
Yeah.
And so like this uniform, this outfit that Skywalker has on was only in the cartoon. To see him like in live action wearing it had to feel very, very strange to the people that watched the cartoon. Or maybe not. Maybe your memory, it all blurs together and the prequels and the Clone Wars are all one thing. And if so, that's probably cool. But I just loved the two major flashbacks to early in the series and then later in the series. And you could tell because the clones change. That's what something my cousin would always point out is there's phase one clones that were in episode two. And then at some point they upgrade and we get phase two clones that look more like stormtroopers. And so you see like Captain Rex in both versions. And yeah, let me know what you thought of these scenes. And then I guess we can talk about Anakin as a spirit or whatever he was inside the world between worlds.
Yeah, no, I thought this was the best use of Hayden Christensen ever in Star Wars and the best usage of Anakin Skywalker. I mean, yeah, he does come out as, you know, one of the main characters, of course, in the Clone Wars cartoon. And Matt Lantern does a great job of Anakin in that series. But I thought this was a fantastic use of Anakin. It made him relevant to me as a character, I think more so than the Clone Wars cartoon. And of course, without the cartoon, you wouldn't have that relationship between him and Ahsoka. But I think even without that, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, even without having seen that other than the four episodes you have, I think it still conveys that and brings it home and makes you feel how connected they were and what an effect his leadership had on Ahsoka as a character. I just loved it. And the scenes of him when he was fighting with Ahsoka in the world between worlds and he was coming toward her and he was flashing between Vader and Anakin, just that whole thing. And, you know, at one point he had the golden eyes and the scar, you know, like when he was in Revenge of the Sith on Mustafar. As he was fighting Ahsoka, he took on the various forms of Anakin and Darth Vader and things like that. And I thought that was great, the way they mixed that. But I think what you were referring to, I agree with, the scenes of the Clone Wars when they're out there fighting droids with the clones. And we have the next character on my list here is the young Ahsoka Tano, and they brought in a young actress, Ariana Greenblatt, to play young Ahsoka, and she did a great job, and their relationship was really strong, and Anakin's leadership was meaningful, and it applied, of course, to what Ahsoka, the adult Ahsoka, was dealing with at the time. And yeah, I just think it was masterfully done. I think that was it was really the highlight of the series, in my opinion, this episode. So,
well, yeah, they Ariana Greenblatt is the actress that played Little Gamora in Infinity War.
Yeah,
and then she was in Barbie just this year. She's the teenage girl that rolls her eyes and says, "Barbie is a representative of the patriarchy, and that sucks." But she has an arc in that movie. Just an astoundingly good-looking little kid, although she's probably not a little kid, but she's so little in the way that child actors are, that I was just like, oh my gosh, Ahsoka was like 8 or 9 when she was assigned to Anakin. And clearly that can't be the case.
Yeah.
Because the Clone Wars only go 3 years, right? And she's a, you know, an older teen at the end of the Clone Wars, but she's just a little, little person, this actress. But they sold it so well. She looked exactly like my memory of animated Ahsoka. I mean, they gave her the same costume and all that. But you get to see what Anakin was like as a mentor, as an older brother type character, trying to instruct her and caring about somebody. This is something that I never saw because I didn't see the Clone Wars show. And it sure as heck isn't in the prequels. It's him as a leader and as a, you know, as whatever Batman is to Robin, you know, and you get two stages of that when she's very, very first placed under his authority. And then later after she has, you know, earned her stripes and all that right before they go their separate ways. And yeah, it made me nostalgic for a show I didn't watch.
That's cool.
And that is high, high praise, guys. And it actually made me abide Hayden Christensen, which has not been the case, except for in that scene where he slaughtered them like because they're like animals and not just the men. I thought that worked really, really well. The only thing I didn't like was that they have the big fight and he's still Hayden Christensen. I just wanted him in the suit. I wanted Darth Vader in the suit.
Yep.
Because they're not the same person in my mind. I know that in some people's minds they are. But once you're in the suit, that is Darth Vader, ladies and gentlemen. And there was this shot that was the coolest thing that I've seen in any Star Wars Disney Plus stuff, including the awesome stuff that happened in Mandalorian. But there's this part where Anakin is going into battle and Ahsoka is hanging back because she doesn't want to kill people. She's just like, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to fight in a war. And Anakin is walking away and there's like this bolt of, there's like an explosion. And so you get a flash. And in the light of this explosion, he is Darth Vader. And you see the cape and all that as he's walking. And then the light fades and he's Anakin Skywalker again. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And his lightsaber went from blue to red in like those 2 seconds or whatever. It was the best representation of Anakin Skywalker is Darth Vader, young man, young middle-aged man. I am surprised you never knew that Anakin Skywalker was Darth Vader. And it's like, I didn't know. Do you know what shot I'm talking about?
You're talking about on the Clone War, on the battlefield, not on the World Between Worlds, because they did that a little bit there too. But you're right. Talking...
Yeah, it was in the battlefield. It was just her perception, I guess, because all of this was in her memory. I don't think... Well, was Anakin there?
I think, yeah, that's a good question, because...
Did she go somewhere, or was this a moment in between life and death?
Yeah,
where her subconscious talks to her and tells her the things that she needs to hear to keep going.
It's hard to say, but I think it's a lot of her memories and her thoughts, like you said, her subconscious. But I think there's probably some essence of Anakin in the World Between Worlds. Again, not a lot has been established on what are the rules of this World Between Worlds. And so you can pretty much do anything you want in there and you know, it's kind of like going into the cave, right, on Dagobah. You know, you take, what does Yoda say?
Only what you take with you.
Only what you take with you goes into the cave. So I think it's very similar for this World Between Worlds. And so, yeah, she brought in her memories of Anakin as a mentor, as Darth Vader, because she knows he became Darth Vader. And fought against him as Darth Vader. But I'd like to think there's a little bit of force essence or something like that of Anakin in there as well.
Well, yeah, we've already talked for 15 minutes and we've only scratched the surface, but
this is huge.
Like, but Anakin blamed Obi-Wan for everything, right? And rightly so, in a way. I mean, if you think about Obi-Wan cutting off his legs and his arms and then leaving him to burn alive.
Yeah.
And somebody out there might say, no, that's not what happened. I saw the movie. I didn't like the movie, but I saw it. Don't you tell me that's not what happened. Anakin has all this rage and hate for Obi-Wan. He probably has this rage and hate for the entire Jedi Order and for Yoda and for Ki-Adi-Mundi. Especially Ki-Adi-Mundi. That guy was a prick. But I doubt that Anakin had hatred for Ahsoka. Even when he was Darth Vader, it's like she is separate from all of these other people that ultimately stood in my way or ultimately pushed me into the fire, whether it was literally or metaphorically. Ahsoka knew that there was something wrong with the Jedi, and so she left. And if I had left, I wouldn't be in this suit today. This is speculation. I have no idea what Anakin is really like. And I need to sit down and watch the fight that she has from season two of Rebels with Darth Vader, because surely there's some of this in their interaction. They talk about this. And clearly the dark side has festered enough within him that he is willing to kill his former Padawan in this fight. Right? But what is your understanding of Anakin's relationship with Ahsoka before and after his fall to the dark side?
I think before, she was the most important relationship that he had. I mean, yes, there was the tension and the brotherhood and the tension that went along with his master, Obi-Wan Kenobi. But I think his biggest connection, aside from his mother when he was a little kid, was Ahsoka. And he was really torn when she left. You know, he kind of pled with her to stay and that they could correct the wrongs of the Jedi Order together or whatever. But she said, I'm out, you know, and left. And I think that left a big hole in him. And, you know, obviously just added on to the reservations he already had about the Jedi. And, of course, being manipulated by Palpatine and everything. But... And I think, you know, after he became Darth Vader, I think that connection was still there in his mind. You know, there's that scene in the last episode of The Clone Wars when Darth Vader shows up on the planet that Ahsoka and Rex were able to escape from the clones and, you know, had confronted Darth Maul and everything. And she had left her lightsabers there. And he finds her lightsabers and, you know, sees all the clone grave markers and everything. And he doesn't say anything. He just sits there and, you know, you get the sense that he's remembering Ahsoka. I don't know if he knows she's dead at that point or not. I'd like to go back and watch the Rebels when Vader and Ahsoka fight as well. But at some point before that fight, she realizes that Darth Vader is Anakin. And then when, you know, she's very conflicted when she's fighting against him. And it's a very similar scene that we had in Obi-Wan Kenobi, where she kind of cracks his helmet and you know, he's looking at her with his own eyes. I mean, but yeah, at that point, you know, he's so far down the dark side that, you know, he's willing to stop her from stopping him at that point. So I really think that their relationship is critical for both of them. And so she's kind of coming to terms with that through this episode and through this series. And yeah, I thought that was very powerful, very motivating part of this whole series was her and Anakin.
And yeah, the very last shot, I believe, of the series is Spirit Anakin looking on with Ahsoka and Sabine. And that sort of lends support to your idea that no, a part of Anakin was in there talking to her. A part that, you know, that he really was there. It wasn't just her imagination. He is still mentoring her. He's still, you know, from beyond the grave, in the same way that Ben Kenobi did with Luke.
Yeah.
Even though Ben Kenobi had a much more limited relationship with Luke Skywalker than Anakin would have had with Ahsoka.
I thought that scene was so much for Hayden Christensen to be there as a Force ghost, you know, watching over Ahsoka. And she sees him. I thought that was so appropriate compared to them changing Return of the Jedi to make Luke see the Hayden Christensen Anakin Skywalker that he'd never seen, or he wouldn't even recognize him as his father. The father that he saw was
Sebastian Shaw,
you know, the original actor. So
well, this series did set up an interesting possibility that Ahsoka has these holograms of Anakin, interactive holograms that she used for training, and she knows Luke Skywalker and knows where he is. And it would be very, very interesting to see Luke interact with this hologram of his father before he turned to the dark side. you know, as a connection with somebody that he never knew, that he never met, essentially.
Yeah.
I think that that would be very neat. We got like 10 seconds, right, of interaction between Ahsoka and Luke in Book of Boba Fett, of all shows.
Yeah.
Yet, I imagine the conversations they must have had and the, you know, the hopes and dreams and things that they're sharing. And Ahsoka at this point, even though Rosario doesn't look older, would be old enough to be Luke's mother easily.
Yes.
You know, and so, well, maybe not easily. She was still a teenager when he was born, right?
Yeah, late teenager, yeah.
But somebody somewhere could explore that relationship, and I think that that is an opportunity that they could take advantage of one day, is to have her share that hologram with Luke, or maybe she already has. At the same time, if Anakin is a Force ghost, then Luke could just talk to Anakin.
True. Yeah.
Anyhow, I feel like I've sidetracked us as usual. Who's the next name on your list?
Let's see. Well, I just put in there Captain Rex, voiced by Temuera Morrison. You know, they got him in there too. Just like they got Genevieve O'Reilly, they got Temuera in there as Captain Rex. But, you know, just brief cameo scenes. I did like the scene, though, where there was the clone on the stretcher.
Yeah.
That had been wounded in battle, and Ahsoka goes up and grabs his hand, you know, and gives him hope. And eventually Anakin comes by and says, okay, we got to go. We got to get out there. And, you know, she's trying to show some compassion and mercy to this clone that's been injured. I thought that was a really good scene.
Yes, I agree. You know, this is going to sound like a criticism, but I don't mean it to be. If they had wanted to cast Ashley Eckstein as Ahsoka in the second flashback, when it's the end of the Clone Wars, I wouldn't have complained about that. I know that there are people that are sad that she didn't get to play live-action Ahsoka, but I hope that they understand that Ashley Eckstein looks like she's 22 years old, even though she's a middle-aged lady.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes somebody doesn't have the right look for something. You know, Rosario is really, really good as Ahsoka, but she also comes across as a mature woman.
Yeah.
And Eckstein doesn't. She still looks so young, which is a blessing, but it's also a curse as far as the parts that she can play.
Yeah.
And when I've heard Eckstein talk, she still sounds like a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah, she does very easily. Yeah.
Anyhow.
She can sound like a Powderpuff Girl, in fact.
Is she one of them?
I think so, yeah. Okay, we already talked about C-3PO, so we can skip over that one.
Well, I thought that it might only be Tony Daniels' voice, that they'd finally gotten somebody else to be in that suit. But as far as I know, he actually got in the suit for one day of work and was happy to come back. And if so, I'm so glad that he's still able to play this part 40 years later.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I'm sure he'll talk about it at his next Star Wars celebration. Then the next guy I have on my list is Captain Carzon Teva. We've seen him before. He's been on Mandalorian. I think even Book of Boba Fett, maybe not.
Yeah.
But he's kind of this recurring character that shows up in this timeline. And I like him quite a bit. He's just kind of got that quality of, you know, he's going to do what he's told to do. And he's an honorable guy, but he's just kind of a working stiff kind of guy. Kind of like Wedge, right? He's a X-Wing pilot guy.
Yeah, he was in that scene on Mandalorian with Zeb. And it's weird that we didn't see Zeb at all in this series.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
He probably should have been there in that last scene where Ezra comes out and says hi to Chopper. And my assumption is that Filoni has plans. You know, he's got a more important scene for their reunion, but
yeah,
I thought he looked great in live action on Mandalorian. Totally convincing. We've already had this conversation, but it's he was absent and didn't need to be on Ahsoka.
Yeah, even, you know, he could have called Hera and wished her luck on her trial or something, you know, just even if it was a a hollow or something of him, you know?
Yeah, as far as Carson Teva goes, I like that he's older, that he's not a 20-year-old, and that he's not, you know, a male model.
Yeah.
and he's not real thin either. He just seems like a normal shaped guy.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next one. Hasbro probably should make a Carson Teva action figure. They haven't yet.
The next one, we talked a lot about Hera on the first episode we did about Ahsoka, but I just thought she should be on here, just kind of wrap up her character arc throughout this. But yeah, she did go and try to help Ahsoka on the planet of Cetos, I think, was the other end of the hyperspace lane or whatever to Peridia. And, you know, she was there to support Ahsoka on that mission and almost lost her commission because of it. But as we talked about last time, Leia sent C-3PO to authorize her mission or whatever. And then we see her at the end when Ezra comes back and she greets him and sets up the how are they going to defeat Thrawn in the future kind of thing.
Okay, and so last episode when I mentioned that Leia should be the general for the New Republic versus Thrawn as the general for the New Empire, maybe it's Hera that's going to be the general for the New Republic that's going to, you know, match wits against Thrawn in the upcoming adventures. And I guess that's fine. She is a substitute for Leia. She's not the substitute that I want, but maybe she's what we will get.
Yeah. I wish she looked a little bit more like the Hera that we remembered from the cartoon, but that's fine. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is a fine actress. So, all right. Now we're getting into some of the bigger characters here. Shin Hati. What's your take on Shin Hati? Played by Ivana Sicano.
Well, she got, sort of got the short end of the stick as far as storylines go. Well, she and obviously Ray Stevenson's character. I liked that she was brash and impulsive and that they didn't kill her off because it made me think, oh, they have plans for this character. There were a couple of times when I was like, okay, this is it for her. They're going to kill her. And they didn't do it. But she is an interesting character. I mean, they were like peas and carrots. Those two, you know, have to be spoken of in the same breath. The master and the apprentice.
Yeah, he's the next guy. Baylan Skull is the next guy on the list.
And what is his name?
Baylan Skull.
Baylan Skull. Yeah, they do not resolve their storylines. And I wanted to wait until the very, very end of our conversation to mention this, but it's just, it all ends on a cliffhanger. And I was unsatisfied by that because I thought that Ahsoka was a one and done miniseries, that there was no intention of having a second series. But I sure didn't feel like that at the end of the last episode. I felt like, nope, this is just season one of Ahsoka. And if that's the case, then there's far more for Shin Hati to do. And sadly, I think she'll have to do all the lifting. Because I think that they'll just leave Baylan Skull out of it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about. What do you think they're going to do with his character? Again, we talked about recasting. Ray Stevenson did an amazing job with Baylan Skull, and it would be really tough to be his replacement. But as a character, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him. You know, I don't have a running screen time of him on the show, but when you think about it, he didn't have a lot of screen time compared to, you know, how many episodes they had. So they could recast him. It just wouldn't be the same, but they obviously had plans for that character. You know, he's on his own mission to get some power source or find the secret of the Force or whatever on this planet of Peridia. There's more than meets the eye on this planet, I guess. And he knows about it, or he's searching for it. And so obviously there's more in the works for that character, at least as they plotted and produced the series. But now with Ray Stevenson having passed away, Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Are they just going to give all of his actions to Shin? And that she's going to take on his, what would you call it, mantle or mission? And she'll do all the stuff that he was supposed to do? Or he'll find some helmet and put it on and we won't see his face anymore? I don't know.
Well, in the same way as we were talking about recasting Carrie Fisher, if they have plans for this character, if he has a major part to play, then yeah, do it. And we can grumble, but it's not like the Cara Dune situation or whatever, where somebody was let go for political reasons. The man is dead, and we would understand if there is a different actor playing him in the next movie, and you just get, sorry, next season, you get somebody who's age appropriate and have them grow out a beard or a fake beard and just say, okay, this is who he is now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a good example in Star Wars where we've seen this done. And the only one that's coming to mind is that the Emperor was played by a different actor in Empire and then in Jedi. And nobody pitched a fit over that. But I guess they did because Lucas reshot it.
Yeah, the only example I can think of is Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies.
Okay, excellent, excellent example. Because Dumbledore was so important that even though Richard Harris was gone, and Richard Harris was great as Dumbledore,
yeah,
he had so much more to do that they just had to recast and hope that people got used to it. And within a year, we did. By the next movie after that, we're just like, oh, Michael Gambon is Dumbledore again. I had forgotten. Yeah, he is. Okay. And what I wondered was, did they shoot stuff for Baylan Skoll to do in the last episode? And then they cut it out because they knew that they would never be able to pay it off or follow it up.
Oh, maybe.
Because he has nothing to do in that last episode. He's on screen for a few seconds, and he's just sort of like looking in the distance, sort of as a reminder. Oh yeah, he was on this show, folks. But he had a lot to do at the very beginning of the series and nothing to do at the end of the series. And maybe we'll never know. But my guess is that Filoni will talk about whatever plans he had for him, or they just have a new actor playing him. Don't deep fake.
Yeah, no, come on.
Don't try and make him look like Ray Stevenson and all that, guys. Just have a new actor and say, yeah, you've got big shoes to fill, but you're up to it, whoever you are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was great. I haven't seen him in a lot of things, but I really loved him in this role. And it's you know, too bad he can't keep going with it. But I think it would be wise to go with a different actor. I thought it was strange. You know, he talked to Shin. Baylan talked to Shin a lot about, you know, we're meant for other things. You know, we're doing stuff together that's more important than all this Empire business. But then all of a sudden he just says, well, I'm out of here. You're on your own. And takes off and leaves her. And I thought that was really strange. You know, if she was his apprentice or Padawan or whatever, she had the braid. You know, why not bring her along? And, you know, or maybe that's not the Sith way, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, I don't think he was a Sith.
He's not really a Sith either.
He was much more like a Jedi who had a falling out, and he was like a reformist, like a church guy that breaks away from the mother church and starts his own church. But he still adheres to a lot of the same teachings and things like that. Yeah, it's too bad that we didn't get a scene where he cut off her braid and said, you are a knight now.
Yeah, or you something know,
you
like are, that. Yeah.
And you can make your own destiny and make your own choices. But they didn't have that scene. They didn't have anything at the end. And I think that's my biggest disappointment at the end of the series, is that it wasn't resolved. That it was like, hey guys, we'll see you after the summer, next season.
Yep.
And I was like, what are you talking about? Mandalorian's not going to come back till like 2026. When will this come back? But like you said, he did great here at the end of his life, suddenly Ray Stevenson had a part where tons of people will recognize him and love him, but he's not around to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Well, since we're talking about more of the darker characters, Morgan Elsbeth is the next person on the list. Her role grew a lot from her short appearance there with on the Ahsoka episode in season 2 of Mandalorian. And I thought that was like a one and done kind of thing. But yeah, she was a pretty major character in this one.
She was, and they gave her character development, and I actually learned to like her as the show was going. And that scene where the three sisters, the three witches, give her the power and this sword, and her eyes turn black and her face gets, you know, these markings or whatever. I thought that was neat because they said something like...
Yeah, I was kind of rooting for her at that point. I'm like, oh, you finally got what you wanted. Good job.
Right. They had said, well, like, you have to leave everything behind if you want this. And she was willing to do it. And I complained when they first announced that they were making a Morgan Elsbeth action figure. Because I'm like, oh, dude, nobody's going to buy that. But if they made a Morgan Elsbeth with the black eyes and the messed up face and the green flaming sword, I think people would buy that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Did you see that sword on the Clone Wars show?
No.
Because I said it was Mother Talzin's, is that her name?
Oh.
It was her sword.
I probably missed that. I mean, I probably watched it, but I don't remember that much. Unfortunately, she was the last gap effort to stop Ahsoka and the rest of them from getting on the Chimera Star Destroyer to get back to the Star Wars galaxy. And Ahsoka ended up killing her at the end, which I guess that's a full arc for that character. But I was a little bit surprised by that. I thought she'd be part of the antagonist for a while, but in a way, I think it really fit. You know, she was kind of the, I don't know about the nemesis of Ahsoka, but she was, you know, they started their fight back in Mandalorian and ended up finishing it here on the planet. And then to follow up on that, we also have the zombie troopers that fought against Ahsoka and Sabine and Ezra as they were trying to get on the Star Destroyer. And I guess I had assumed they were already kind of zombified or whatever, you know, similar to Marok or whatever. But no, they were killed by our heroes. And then the witches did a little spell, and their green magic went into these stormtroopers. And their eyes glowed green, and they just kept coming back again and again and again after our heroes. And I don't know. I thought that was kind of a neat thing. I guess we've heard of Death Troopers before. I think there was a book or something about Death Troopers. I don't know. I didn't mind it. A lot of people thought it was kind of corny, but I thought it was kind of cool.
I'm of the opinion that it was corny. Mostly because I never felt like our three characters were in any danger.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
They were just too easy to beat. And, you know, they had to keep the violence PG. I get that. But I kept saying, well, cut off their heads. Guys, cut off their heads. They're just getting up again. Cut off their heads. Well, it's not like any of those three characters are expendable. People would be upset if Sabine died, and Ahsoka is the title character. And yeah, the whole point was getting Ezra back, and so you couldn't kill any of them. But I wanted them to get tired and afraid, and I didn't feel either of those things from those three stoic Jedi.
Yeah.
But, you know, I liked the way that they moved. I mean, they were George Romero zombies in Stormtrooper costume.
Yeah.
And so that's two great tastes that taste great together. I didn't love the way that they looked. And my, you know, as we were watching it, my cousin was just like, oh, they need to make like a 4-pack of zombie stormtroopers. I want to buy that. And I'm sure there are other people that felt the same way. It's like, I don't need to have any zombie stormtrooper toys, but Hasbro should still make them. Yeah.
And then we'll end off with the two main characters here, I guess. But I did want to talk once again before we leave about Hu Yang, the droid from the Jedi Temple that's kind of partnered up here with Ahsoka, played by David Tennant. And yeah, I liked this character all the way through. I thought it was kind of neat that he had these extra little arms that came out of his chest or whatever that he could fight off other things. But he was, you know, and he did a lot of repairs on the ship. But he offered a lot of insight, too, I thought, to Ahsoka and later on to Ezra. He was talking to Ezra. He's like, who is your master? And he says, oh, it was, I want to say Caleb Doom, but.
Well, that was his name.
That was his name.
Kanan Jarrus is.
Yeah, there you go.
The name that he gave himself once Order 66 happened, I think. From the Bad Batch episode.
Yeah.
The first episode, that's what I learned, is that his name was Caleb Doon, and then he later went by the name Kanan Jarrus. But yeah, I thought that that was neat, that that droid remembered him, that he had an eidetic memory or something of every Jedi that he had encountered and taught and befriended, and then he was able to share that with Ezra, who would not have known the Jedi Order or the Jedi Temple or any of that stuff.
No.
Although I know he did talk to Yoda.
And he could tell who the Jedi was by their lightsaber. Yeah, I just thought he was kind of a neat, useful character, you know, could provide background and, you know, give some advice or whatever now and again, and was useful. But yeah, I think he's up there as one of the great droids of Star Wars.
Do you want an action figure of him?
I do. I do want an action figure of him.
He was also comic relief, too. Not a lot.
Yeah.
But he was 3PO-esque in that, you know, he worried about the people around him. And he gave advice and nobody ever took it. Why won't anyone listen to me? But he was also old and had the wisdom of, you know, somebody who's been around the block. So I thought that that was neat. And yeah, I never would have known that that was David Tennant's voice if it weren't in the credits. It just doesn't sound like him to me. Probably because he's doing a voice.
I didn't know it was David Tennant until I saw it in the credits. But after I saw that, I could definitely tell it was him.
Oh, okay. And then I'm assuming the other character you wanted to talk about is Sabine.
Yep, Sabine.
And
yep.
They gave her a very nice arc. Of where she started out sickeningly immature, and that's coming from me. And then she, you know, she grew up and became responsible and in a very, very short time. But that's all right. And yeah, ultimately I did like her. You know, she got better and she made her master proud, and I think that that's neat. And then, yeah, they're stuck together. At the end, is Huang with them, stuck on the planet?
He is, yeah. And I liked that Sabine, the Force wasn't easy for her. You know, she was struggling. She was learning about it and, you know, kind of like Luke, being headstrong and in a hurry, not patient. You know, she wanted it to be now. Kind of thing. And she kind of grew into, like you said, she kind of grew into, hey, I can use the Force. I'm not an expert at it, but I can use it in a clutch, you know. And she got her lightsaber, you know, when she needed to, using the Force. She got Ezra onto the Star Destroyer by using the Force. You know, she's no Jedi Knight or anything, but she's learning and she's getting confidence and things like that. And I think that was good. Of course, next we're going to talk about Ahsoka. But the one other regret that I have about this, not knowing enough about the history, was we got a little bit of an answer. I think Hu Yang explained that Ahsoka was training Sabine, but then when Mandalore got destroyed and poisoned or whatever by the Empire, all the stuff we saw in the season 3 of Mandalorian, at that point, there was so much, I guess, hate and revenge feelings in Sabine that Ahsoka didn't feel like she should train her anymore because it was too dangerous. that she would go to the dark side or whatever. And we kind of have to infer that from what Hu Yang was saying. But I still don't, I still would like to know more about why did Ahsoka even start training Sabine? And, you know, did they kind of have a camaraderie after? I mean, they knew each other from Rebels, but they weren't close or anything. And maybe they're going to explore that too, and they're saving that. But I think I would have enjoyed more of a history between Ahsoka and Sabine other than, oh yeah, there's this rift between them. And then now, of course, they're close again. But I think there should have been more information there on that relationship.
See, that's interesting what you just said about the Knight of a Thousand Tears, right? Isn't that what the Armorer calls it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember that.
I would like to have seen more of a temptation toward the dark side from, or more of a temptation toward violence and stuff from Sabine, because my understanding is that the Mandalorians are a very violent people and that they were enemies of the Jedi for generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if she is naturally drawn toward bloodshed and then her planet is destroyed and she's just like revenge, and she won't listen to what Ahsoka has to say. She's just fueled by it. I can understand being like, nope, I've seen this before. Our training is done. And maybe there would be more resentment there from Sabine toward Ahsoka. I guess there's been years for that resentment to cool. If Filoni wanted to do a Tales of the Jedi episode where they flash back to around when Return of the Jedi was happening, or you know, so we can see, that would be neat. Or I guess it would be before Return of the Jedi. When did Mandalore fall?
Yeah, good question. I'm not sure where that fits in the timeline. But yeah, you just brought up another thing. What were they doing during the original trilogy?
Yeah.
And all that going on. Why wasn't Ahsoka involved in that? They never answered that. Why wasn't Sabine with Hera trying to, you know, be part of the rebellion or whatever? I wish we could have got some answers on that.
Yeah, there's no satisfying answer right now, except for that because none of those characters existed during the Galactic Civil War.
Well, yeah.
But somebody with a clever mind can come up with a place that Ahsoka was during the 5 years of Star Wars through Jedi that makes it so she wasn't just off being selfish or whatever she was doing. She couldn't help. Or she was helping in her own way, but their paths just never crossed. Does Ahsoka know Princess Leia? I mean, clearly Ahsoka knows Luke Skywalker, but when did they first meet? And how did they first meet? And were they instantly friends? I wonder. And you could tell these stories through animation if you wanted to. Or they can tell them through live action, like we saw that flashback to the Clone Wars, which was really neat. Somebody that loved that show, that watched all the seasons of Clone Wars, I could see them just like standing up with tears in their eyes and being like, wow, look at this.
Yeah, I'd rather have it in animation or a movie or a TV show than I would to have it show up in a book or a comic. I like books and I like comics, but I think some of this stuff is important enough where it needs to be seen somewhere.
Yeah, and that's something that I've talked to you about before, is that Filoni killed off Asajj Ventress in a book. And it's just like, but why? I don't get that. As far as I understand, she was a major character on that show. If she was a major character, why not show that in something? Even if it is a Tales of the Jedi episode, or just say she's still out there, that Dark Disciple is not canon anymore.
Yeah.
Or maybe it isn't canon. It's hard for me to know on something like that. And I don't know Asajj Ventress. I've never seen Asajj Ventress in anything except through the Tartakovsky cartoon. And so stuff like that, yeah, if it happens in a book or it happens in a comic or happens in a video game, it doesn't feel real to me.
Yep, I agree.
It seems like Filoni has plans within plans. He is Grand Admiral Thrawn. And somebody recently said that he's going to make a trilogy of movies. I never heard that.
I didn't hear that either.
But I believe you if you say that. I know that he was going to make a movie and that they were ostensibly calling it Heir to the Empire. But my assumption was that that was years away.
Yeah, who's to say? Maybe they won't have a second season of Ahsoka and they'll just pick it back up in a movie. That would be strange, but maybe that's what they would do.
I guess so, but it seems like you need a broader canvas to answer all of these questions. To show what's going to happen. There's that skeleton crew show, which we still know almost nothing about, but it takes place in this same timeline. And my assumption is that Filoni and Favreau will run that show as well. And so we will see crossovers with these characters and these worlds. And that was supposed to happen this year. I doubt that it will now. It probably will be early next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got most of the production done. Well, I guess once the actors' strike finishes up, I guess they'd have Jude Law to go around and promote it at that point. But I don't know where they're at in the process, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know either. But when we went to Star Wars Celebration last year, they were already working on that show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so surely by Star Wars Celebration this year, they had finished shooting it. Well, I guess we'll see. But there are many, many more stories to tell. I'm not satisfied that the story is done. So if they announce as soon as the strikes are over that an Ahsoka season 2 will shoot next summer or something, I would be thrilled about that. Oh, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, I would too.
We've run out of time. I really liked this series. I felt like the quality was way up there and it didn't drag. It didn't feel like there was not enough story to go around. It's too bad that there were only 8 episodes because I felt like the quality was high through all the series and it left me wanting more. I recommend Ahsoka to everybody. Where do you feel like it stacks up on Disney Plus series?
Oh, I think it's right behind Mandalorian season 1 and 2. I mean, it's a different animal than the Mandalorian is, but it's above Obi-Wan and it's above Book of Boba Fett and Andor. I liked Andor, but this feels more like Star Wars to me.
Okay.
Well, so yeah, no, I liked it all the way through. You know, there's still questions that I wish would have been answered or explained. I mean, it wouldn't have taken too much to explain some of these things in some quick dialogue or something, but I don't know. I guess I'm willing to wait and see what Filoni has waiting after this. So,
yeah, what I hope he doesn't do is leave it to the comics or a book to answer these questions.
Yes, I agree.
We have seen that done before. And for some people, I guess it is satisfying, but not for me. And so please bring on more. And as far as I know, the show was successful enough ratings-wise that if they want to do another season, the money should be there. The support should be there. It's not one of those, like they keep talking about doing a Lando Calrissian series with Donald Glover. It's just like, well, yeah, I would watch that. But it is a spin-off of Solo, a Star Wars story.
It is.
Which was not successful. This was successful. So they should be able to continue it if they want to.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think definitely building the framework for what he wants to do. And there's plenty of room for characters like the Mandalorian and or Din Djarin and Grogu and all of them to come in at different things.
Well, Bo-Katan too. They built Bo-Katan up as a major, major character. And something that would be interesting is, would Bo-Katan get along with Ahsoka? I don't think she would. So let's see them butt heads. That would be fun.
Yeah, where Sabine would have to come in and be the referee or whatever between them. That would be interesting. Yeah.
And whose side would Sabine choose? She owes her allegiance to Bo-Katan because that's, you know, from the planet. She's royalty, essentially. But yet Ahsoka is her master now. there's some potential for drama there.
Yeah, some conflict and all that. Yeah, it'd be interesting. So yeah, I feel much more hopeful about the future of Star Wars than I have been with some of these other series. I think this really opened it up for more, and so I'm looking forward to more. It's not just, you know, after watching Obi-Wan, it's like, well, that was okay, but now what kind of thing. And now with this Ahsoka, they're coming back for a second season of Andor, but there's a definite closed door at the end of that, so...
Yeah, they've really got their hands full on Andor, because we know that they've compressed four seasons into one.
Yeah.
So that could be disastrous, but it could also be like, wow, so much happened in this episode. How do we talk about it? We'll see. I think that's next year, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
But once again, you have sacrificed your evening to talk Star Wars with me, and I just yawned. And I thought, boy, how tired must Marshall be? Oh, man, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, I think it's time. Yeah, my yawns will come in the morning for sure. Or later in the morning. But yeah, like I always say, you can get a hold of us at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com or 77J into 107. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/journeyinto. And support Rish over at patreon.com/RishOutfield. We'd love your support. And thank you for listening to this. And we will be back to talk about something else Star Wars soon. There's probably still stuff from Ahsoka we haven't talked about fully. We still have Tales of the Jedi to catch up on. And maybe some more things that are out there in Star Wars world. So we shall return.
Yeah, my hands are kind of tied right now, but I really wanted to do a Thanksgiving Delusions of Grandeur, to the point where, like, last November I started writing it, but I'm not sure how I could fit it in.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll have it be more of a Christmas episode.
Sure.
But yeah, just to be continued.
Yeah, and I have yet to attempt another Hoth 105 sequel. But that's always a good excuse to bring Bria back to talk about Star Wars. So I'll have to look at getting something going with that, too.
Yeah, that would be cool. I look forward to finding out what she thought and like how much of it has she watched. Was she lost? Was she totally on board with this series? But yeah, all of that is to be continued. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. As soon as I edit all of these hours of recordings that we've done.
Well, I appreciate all the work that you do on this. So I will let you go for now, though, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thank you for listening, anybody who's out there, and may the Force be with you.
And you as well. Good night.
This podcast is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it to make a profit.
I find your lack of Creative Commons license disturbing.
Vader, release him. Now, the Delusions of Grandeur podcast has been produced under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License, which means you may listen, download, and share the file, but you may not charge for it or alter the episode. I'm going to at least claim it as my own and monetize it on YouTube.
Not this shit again.
I did try to warn you, Admiral.